This is Phil Ferrand, and I am driving home. It's Thursday today, episode 62. I think I forgot to say what episode it was last week. Anyways, the air conditioning is on. It's a little warm today, although we have had some beautiful, beautiful weather here recently. Everything is puttering along. I'm working on my super secret project. And I've been building it inside Autodesk Inventor, and I have a 30-day free trial of that I have used up, 18 days worth or so. That seems to be going fine. I have had some interruptions over the last week, so I'm not nearly as far as I would like to be, but I'm going to try to remedy that some tonight and some tomorrow. I have actually 4 pieces to build, and I've pretty well structurally got the first piece built as it merges into the second piece, and I'm working on the second piece to the third piece, and structurally I'm almost there, but I have a few little tweaks. I hope to get that done tonight. Then I gotta get started on the fourth piece, and if we can get that all done, then maybe I can ship it off and have one made before I actually run out of demo. That is the goal, at least. In other news, we just keep making knit clips. Knit clips are nitpicking with video clips. Knit clips, we keep making knit clips, and that all seems to be going just fine. The people who are watching them seem to enjoy them, and so now our task is to simply see if we can get more people watching them. A lot more people watching that. But Alan, my son-in-law, who is the marketing director of Knit Central, has been a bit busy with youth retreats and those kind of things. And so I have understood that completely. We did have a lovely, lovely weekend with our daughter, who they found out she was pregnant after Alan had already planned the dates for this youth retreat, and so he was going to be gone, and she was going to be pregnant at her house, and we said, we don't think so, you will come spend the weekend with us. And we had, over the Memorial Day weekend, just had a really, really lovely time. Lizzie and I got to go shopping, grocery shopping. We used to do that all the time when she was living with us, and she's just doing really, really well. So that was a nice treat. Anyways, today I am still working on a book called God Is Not One. I don't know if I have mentioned that yet, but it's a really fascinating book that is a survey of the 8 most influential religions, according to the author, in the world, and their differences and their approaches to life. And it's very, very interesting. I'm enjoying that. But I'm not quite done with that book yet, and I'm still kind of percolating on what it all means. And so I need to kind of finish that up and think about that a little bit more before I talk too much about that. This week, I actually came across an article, and I have spent some time talking to the 2 young women in my life who I see on a regular basis, my daughter and then the wife of my best friend's son, talking with them about this issue a little bit and getting their opinions on it. I was reading an article last week or earlier, it would have been at the end of last week, and the article was titled Women and Body Image, A Man's Perspective. It was by William Leith, I think is how he says his name. And it was a very interesting article. And I went through the article and went, well, I have my own perspective on those things. Basically, the author started out the article talking about a situation that many of his male friends had related to him. They're dating a young woman, and they're trying to get ready to go out to eat. She's trying on dresses, trying on shoes, can't find the right combination. She tries more and more and more and more. She gets more and more frustrated, then all of a sudden just collapses in a heap. I don't have anything to wear. I'm so fat. You know, all that kind of stuff. And suddenly the prospect of going out to eat disappears. Because there's no seeming ability for the young woman to find a combination of clothing that satisfies some image that she has of what she should look like. And the author of the article actually was quoting from a couple of different sources in trying to explain this and was trying to come to a conclusion about why this should be. He really didn't have any solutions. He just was trying to write an article so that men would understand this more and just accept that this is a part of life. One of the persons that he quoted from was a woman named Naomi Wolf, who had written a book called The Beauty Myth. And it sounds like an interesting book. Who knows? I may order it someday. Her perspective is that when a woman is having a crisis about how she looks, there's not really anything you can do about it as a significant person in her life, a male. It's just nothing. She has no solutions whatsoever. Because according to Ms. Wolf, no matter what the man says, it just hurts her more. So if he, for instance, tries to comfort her by saying, you know, that is not, you know, this is not, you should not be so focused on this. You should be focused. If he tries to tell her that, in essence, he's saying that her pain that she experiences is trivial. That's how she's going to interpret it. And so that's just going to make it worse. And if he agrees with her and says, well, yeah, you really didn't look that good in that stuff, or yeah, you really are putting on the pounds and you are fat, okay, that's even worse. And then she was talking about the fact that it even goes beyond that, because if he says, well, you know, I just love you just the way you are. Now, he's in essence says, well, no, you aren't beautiful. And then he really can't say that he loves her just because she's beautiful. So, there, according to Wolf, there's just no way out of this. It's just hopeless. And she calls this the uninhabitable territory between the sexes. Hopefully, you've listened to this podcast long enough that you know that I'm really not much one for the attitude or the conclusion that everything is hopeless. So, he goes on in this article to talk about some more people, and he does talk about our culture. He's trying to find a reason for all of this, and he talks about our culture and some of the things that the author in this article, William Leith, had to say about culture. It is absolutely true. He says that there is this solid pulse that running through our culture that aims at women and says, be beautiful, be beautiful, be beautiful, be beautiful, be beautiful, be beautiful, and be beautiful like this. And if you'll just buy this or put this on, then you'll be beautiful, and you'll be able to attain this goal of being beautiful. Unfortunately, as he points out, the goal seems to be getting harder and harder to attain. And this does constitute a real problem. As he said in the article, everyone does know that part of being beautiful is you're supposed to be slim. And the difficulty is that ideal seems to be getting farther and farther out of reach. He quoted some statistics that I found pretty interesting. I think he said that in 1960, the average model weighed 10% less than the average woman. At this point, the average model weighs 25% less than the average woman. And I think there's two things caused by that. One is the epidemic of obesity in America, where we as Americans just keep getting larger and the average size keeps increasing, and so you've got that going on. And then the flip side of that is obviously the designers of the fashion industry, when they want to portray their clothing, they go out and find very slim, very tall, very gaunt women. Now, I don't know. It would be interesting to find out whether during the whole Twiggy phase, which I happen to remember, if in fact the women models of today are more or less slim than the women who were in the Twiggy phase. And if they're not, then maybe the majority of what's happening is that we as a population are just getting larger. But there is definitely a trend. And the author of this article is predicting that soon the average model will weigh 30% less than the average woman in America. And then he notes, which is an observation for what it is, as Susie Orbach has pointed out, these slim women do not have the bottom of a normally skinny woman because they've had work done, nor do they have the breasts of a skinny woman because they've had work done. And so what is being portrayed as this is your ideal in the media very much ends up being something that is not natural, has not been natural, and will never be natural. That the proportions and the sizes are not something that can be achieved in any other manner than by maybe, you know, one in a billion, or by going under the knife and having plastic surgery done. And in addition to the physical alterations that are going on with the images of beauty that we have, I noted in my book Still Whisper that there's a whole lot of photoshopping going on. It was interesting, and there's lots of examples of this. I noted in the book that the scuttlebutt that I have read through articles are that, in fact, there are some of the top female actresses that they have their own professional photoshopper. That there's no image that goes out of them to the public without being run past this professional photoshopper. And his job is to go, or her job, I don't know, is to go in and tweak the photograph and slim the waist a little bit, you know, whatever. Take care of any blemishes, make sure that the face is properly angled, all this sort of thing. I was, many years ago, and I have the pictures at home, looking at posters of Keira Knightley. I think it was for a Robin Hood movie. And Keira Knightley is standing there posed in this macrame top that is fairly revealing. They showed the poster that had been produced in Britain of her, and then they showed the very same poster that had been released in the United States of her, and somewhere along the line, her bust size had magically grown. And of course, it was just photoshopping. There was something else I was going to talk about this on this. I don't know. I stayed up very late last night, and frankly, my brain is a little bit fried. So, it's probably not important. Oh, I know what it was. I also found it very intriguing. I had rented the movie, The September Issue, which is about the editor-in-chief of Vogue. And I picked up some interesting things from watching that and may revisit them in a podcast that comes up. But at one point, one of the stylists who was setting up the photo shoot was trying to figure out how to do a really cool photo shoot with these models. At the same time, this documentary called The September Issue was being shot. And she came up with this idea of having the cameraman who was shooting the documentary be part of the photo shoot. And so she had the cameraman come and had him stand in front of the backdrop and just had him jump up and down several times, jump, 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 and they caught him in the air with the camera on his shoulder, obscuring his face, and then they brought in the model and had her jump and jump and jump, and then they photoshopped the two together. And, of course, the photographer, the videographer who's shooting the documentary, he's just a guy and he's got a pot belly and all this kind of stuff. And they had put together the proofs for the editor-in-chief, and the editor-in-chief looked at it, and her immediate reaction is, well, let's go get the Photoshop people on it because we just need to take off that punch that he has. And that's what you can do in Photoshop. You can do all that sort of thing. You can just remove the pot belly. But she really wanted that removed because, you know, that's, we don't need to be looking at that. And the stylist was saying, no, we aren't going to remove that because he's a real person. And real people, you know, sometimes are a little overweight. And so it was interesting to watch that whole dynamic, even when it comes to men. But obviously, far and away, there's a lot greater emphasis on perfection for women. And so we definitely are trending in this country towards a situation where the images that we are displaying everywhere are of women who are thinner and thinner, and even when they're physical or have had significant kinds of body work done, that in their thinness they have fullness in strategic places. And then beyond all that, if that still doesn't get it, then we just Photoshop them and we end up with this extremely unrealistic image that's being pushed and pushed and pushed and pushed. There's no question that's all true. But as the writer of this article said, is that really the explanation? Well, for the actual explanation, and I think the explanation does have some truth in it, he actually went back to another author who had written a book. I think the name of the book is The Evolution of Desire, and it was written by an American psychologist named David Buss. And he traces this idea of a woman making harsh demands on herself to be beautiful, or striving to be beautiful, striving to attain the images of beautiful that are approved of in society, in whatever society she lives in. He traced that all the way back to the Stone Ages and evolution, that women are hardwired. Again, nothing they can do about this. Hardwired because beauty was the only way that women could attract the appropriate man so that he could provide for her. And the author of this article said, I'm actually on my dirt drive now so I can read quotes. He said, now I'm getting closer to understanding why women are so critical of their bodies. Since prehistoric time, they have had a hardwired look to how they look, hardwired link to how they look. For tens of thousands of years, it was crucial. It could be the difference between having a protector and not having one, between life and death, even. And he went on in closing the article, and he made a quoted John Berger, who I guess is an art critic, who wrote, men look at women. Women watch themselves being looked at. This determines not only the relations of men to women, but the relation of women to themselves. And the man in the article then concluded by saying, wow, that's really tough. So now you can understand why women have these meltdowns. And he didn't say this, but this is my commentary. there's nothing that can be done about this, and it's just the way it is. So, you know, if your girlfriend has a breakdown and she just hates the way she looks, there's nothing you can do, so apparently you should just walk out of the room. I don't know what you're supposed to do. I'm getting my mail. One moment. So I'm reading this article and looking through this stuff and checking the references and kind of going around here and there. And in the process of all this, hopefully by now you understand that one of the first things I do is I put this into my little grid work of flesh versus spirit. The grid work says that everything that we are doing in life falls into this grid work of the war between flesh versus spirit. And if you follow what your flesh is trying to tell you, it will lead inevitably to destruction. If you follow what the spirit is telling you, it will lead inevitably to life. Now then, without wanting to be judged as trivializing these issues, the question is, this great desire that many women have to be perceived as beautiful, is that flesh or spirit? And in talking with my daughter about it this week, and in talking with my best friend's son's wife about it this week, I gave them my conclusion that in fact it is flesh. Now, I know some people are going to say, well, what's wrong with wanting to be beautiful? Okay, there's nothing wrong with wanting to be beautiful. But what the actual problem is really gets back to what this David Buss was saying about the prehistoric women. I don't necessarily think that women are genetically wired to want to be beautiful because of what happened tens of thousands of years ago. I think women want to be beautiful because they're listening to their flesh. Now, I'm not saying that if a woman wants to doll herself up, if a woman wants to express herself artistically, visually, fine and dandy. There's nothing wrong with that. However, if the reason that a woman wants to be beautiful is because she believes the lie that her flesh has told her, that if you're beautiful, then you will no longer have any struggles in life. It will be like winning the lottery. If you're beautiful, people will just give you things, and you really won't have to work at anything in life. You can just wander through. You won't get tickets. Men will buy you gifts. You can find some rich man to marry, and then he'll take care of all your needs, and your life will be wonderful because you'll be taken care of, which really is the root of this, I want to be beautiful. It's not because I want to achieve a certain visual visual aesthetic. It's because I want to get to the place where I can pick and choose who is going to take care of me. And the problem with that, first of all, if that is your entire pursuit, who's going to take care of me? That is a very inward-focused, selfish motivation. And if you feed selfish motivations, you will just become more selfish. Second of all, it is a deep lie and will give birth to dissatisfaction in life, because true satisfaction in life will come from embracing the epics and the challenges of life and making your own way. And so, if you're only looking for someone else to take care of you, you will never embark on the epics and quests and adventures that this life has, because you'll be so busy trying to find someone to help you escape from those. And so it's really a double-edged sword. And the only result that will come from it is destruction. Sadly, I had a conversation with a friend this week who has a sister who is struggling with anorexia. And there are factors involved in it, and we talked about those factors. But underneath all of this are lies. Either lies that you're going to go on, you're going to get fat, and nobody's going to want you. No one's going to provide for you. Or your husband's going to divorce you if you put on a few pounds. I mean, this poor woman is to the place where they have a monitor on her arm to determine how much movement she's doing during the day, to figure out how many calories she's burning from movement, to figure out if she's actually eating enough to replace those calories, because she is dangerously, dangerously thin. And it's not enough. Why isn't it enough? Because there's a voice that's telling her, if you can just look a certain way, you can escape from the challenges of life. It's the same voice that puts people in the lottery. It's the same voice that puts people into drugs. It's the same voice that puts people into alcoholism and sexual addiction. It's all the same thing. And I was heartened this week as I talked to my daughter and I talked to my best friend's son's wife, because that's not their way of approaching life at all. They're healthy, they eat well, they exercise, and I have just really been very pleased at my daughter's response to her pregnancy. Because, as you all know, and I really need to wrap this up, sorry, I'm trying to find a landing point. As you all know, a lot of interesting things happen to a woman's body when she is pregnant. But my daughter has navigated all those things seemingly really well. She has been very patient with all the discomfort that has come from being pregnant. She's made up little songs to sing to herself when she looks down, and she just keeps getting bigger and bigger. And she has done very well in terms of her health and diet. She's eaten. She's healthy. She's not skinny, skinny, but from behind, you could barely tell that she was even pregnant. And one of the things she would do when, you know, she kept getting bigger and bigger, you know, she'd just make up songs. And one of them was she'd be patting her belly and saying, big belly, big belly, big belly, big belly, just singing along. Because she recognized it was a natural part of life, that it was a thing of beauty, and that all that effort was going to result in something wonderful. As opposed to Jillian Michaels of Biggest Loser fame. I was reading an article. Jillian Michaels, who is 36, told Women's Health that she is unwilling to become pregnant because of the way it would change her body. Quote, I'm going to adopt. I can't handle doing that to my body, she told the magazine. Also, when you rescue something, it's like rescuing a part of yourself. Okay, well, adopting is great. And there are lots of babies out there that need to be adopted. Yes, great. But, you know, just for the sake of the human race, I'm glad there are more women who don't feel the way Jillian Michael feels about pregnancy, because frankly, we would come to a halt very quickly if most of the women in the world were simply concerned, so concerned about the way their body looked and how it was shaped and people's perceptions of them, that they didn't want to get pregnant because, you know, it would change my body and it would distort my body, and I just can't have that. And the sadness is that this little baby that's coming along, which will be our first grandchild, is going to have a profound effect on both my daughter and my son-in-law, and frankly, the rest of all of us. I as a grandfather, my wife as a grandmother, our parents as great-grandparents, this baby is going to bring us a profound amount of joy. And none of that joy would be achievable if Lizzie, my daughter, was so concerned about the way her body looked and was so concerned about the image and the acceptance of the image that has been portrayed in our society of what women are supposed to look like, that she refused to get pregnant. I'm happy to report that my daughter has a wonderful concept of her body and what it's for. And because of that, grandbaby, yay. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.